about our newsletter and sign up for it. Also, find out about our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Fighting for survival is such a boring battle. Wanna get into my car, I wanna drive out to Seattle, where the used record stores have much better prices. But I don't have a car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me? I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4, and the condom that's still in there that has probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Believe in the power of community radio? Then show your support by donating to KBOO today. We have a spring fundraising goal of raising $80,000 by May 31st, and we need listeners like you to help us get there. Show your support for non-commercial, people-powered community radio by going to kboo.fm and click on the donate button to become a member of KBOO today.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you. Yesterday, we checked in with folks in Minneapolis to find out where things were going. And we had a feeling that it was going to unfold. The anger, the trauma, the circumstances that people are weighing from past generations and past issues, you could see it headed in the direction that it took last night in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the fires burnt. People were out in the streets by the hundreds, some say thousands. But I think at the end of the day, no matter what, as people are looking at the fires and, you know, talking about it pro and con, we should not forget that what people were reacting to was the lynching, the domestic terror that took place of a man by the name of Gregory Floyd. As a cop sat on his neck and probably broke it in front of dozens of people and really didn't give two F's about it. And they're not arrested, and that's where the anger is. That's where the trauma is. Joining us, and somebody who was out there and had a long night, is Roxanne Anderson. Roxanne is an artist, an activist, and somebody who has some things to say and share. So welcome to the show, Roxanne, and you had a long night, you were telling me.
Yeah, I did. I did have a long night. I did have a long night, as did many, many Minneapolites.
Did you see things headed in the direction that it was?
Well, you know, I think for many of us who have been doing activist and organizing work, you know, you kind of feel it. It's an undercurrent. It's a raging fire before the spark, you know, so to speak. And so you can feel that. It's like a storm coming. You can smell it in the air. You can feel it. If you pay attention, the hairs on the back of your head will stand up because people are so enraged. That's a very long answer to yes. I think that we knew it was coming. I think that folks knew that it wasn't going to be, a quiet, speech made by politicians and a few artists and people march and then everybody go home happy. I think people knew that it was going to erupt.
It seems pretty simple for many of us watching from the outside. If those four cops were arrested, put in handcuffs, and sent to jail, the same way you or I, if we did anything even remotely similar to what was witnessed, you know, not only would we be publicly condemned, we would be in jail with no bail. Do you think that would have changed, and do you see it moving in that direction? Do you think those four police officers, in particular the main one, Derek Calvin, or Carvin, I might be mispronouncing his name, will he face some sort of charges?
I feel like I don't want to go out on a limb and say yes, because, I mean, the obvious answer is yes. They should definitely be charged. Yes would be the correct answer. They will be charged. But we know all too often in our society that is not the case. And in fact, many times officers are rewarded with pay raises and job title increases. So we know that historically that has not been the case in the United States of America. We also can see really clearly that, you know, our elected officials, to the good degree, most of them are on that wavelength. The mayor said on microphone for everybody to hear that very thing that you just said. If it was any of us, including him, we would have already been arrested in handcuffs and be sitting in the jail. So I think that this is a problem of the system. It is up to the district attorney to do that. And our district attorney, Mike Freeman, has a long history of not prosecuting the police, of not doing the due diligence that he is awarded with his office, and keeping justice in check. And that feels really scary for me to say in a public way, but I'm going to say it, I'm going to stand behind it, because it's not just the mayor, it's not just the governor. You know, there are many pieces of that system, a system that's very broken, and anybody who knows anything about gears, when the gears and the teeth of the gears are not working correctly, the engine, the motor, the device does not turn, right? And so I think that that's what's up with our system right now, is that even though some elected officials think that that should be the case and have outwardly said so, there is a division between that segment and the prosecuting district attorney. And he has a long track record of not prosecuting.
Roxanne, you said that you're part of an organization where you're an artist and an activist, and part of what you do involves healing. I want to see if you could put that hat on for a minute, because, you know, I don't live in Minneapolis. I'm here in the Bay Area. I've been there a few times. I love that place, that area. But I'm still disturbed, and I'm still upset, and I'm still angry at what happened with Philando Castile. That hasn't left me. Now, I'm not privileged to being around somebody like yourself who may have an organization that does that healing and was on the ground, but I can't separate what I saw and what we're hearing with Gregory Floyd, with Philando Castile, because that's like 2 years ago, or maybe 2.5 years ago, and he was acquitted. What has been the vibe like for folks like yourselves and others who live in that area, who are up close and personal with that trauma, then to turn around and see something as egregious as this?
Well, I believe that that's why we saw such such an eruption of people. You know, there were thousands of people. There were, you know, two different distinct camps of people. There were folks that were kind of holding down the intersection of 38th and Chicago, where George Floyd was murdered. And then there were people who were moving in on the third precinct. And this is where the majority of the outburst that we saw publicly come out in flames took place. And I think that there's often that thing that happens in protests and rebellion, where you have a group of people who are protesting in outrage, and then there are people who are just enraged. And that enragement turns very quickly if those systems don't turn right. So I think that, you know, had those officers been arrested on camera in front of everybody, that could have squelched some of that anger that was brewing from Philando, from Jamar Clark, from, you know, all the other many, many black and brown bodies who have been murdered by state-sanctioned violence over the last 3 or 4 years. And many of those are folks that people knew and recognized from community. And so that makes that that pain that much more egregious, because there has been no outlet for all these other brothers. There has been no justice for Jamar Clark. There has been no justice for Philando. There's been no justice for, you know, on and on. We can list all the names. Sandra Bland, you know, say all their names because we know them. And the real fact is that there has been no justice served for any of those. And so I think that that's the boiling point, right? There is, it's like a, you know, simmering pot that's, you know, it's a pressure cooker. And we saw some of that pressure get released last night. But I don't think the pot's done cooking. You know, I think there's still some more pressure in there. And I think that, you know, unless we see some swift movement, I think people are still going to show their pain. I'm hoping that, you know, our healers and our leaders can give us peace through words, through music, through song, through art. And still, I know that even though art has the ability to change everything, that change also has to come within the system. Until people see that change happening in the system, there will be unrest.
A couple of questions or a couple of thoughts come to mind. Last night, as we were seeing things unfold, the usual narratives were put forth. They're burning their communities. Why don't they go to the house of the police officers instead of just burning down a Target or Wendy's or an Apple store, which, you know, were all shown to have come under fray? You mentioned that people had surrounded the third precinct. They did it Wednesday and they did it last night. We know that people went to the house of that officer. And I'm wondering why that narrative is not carried. It doesn't seem like, from what I was hearing and watching, that people were just willy-nilly on the street. People were like, I'm sick, and this is who I'm pissed off at, and let's go to these places. That seemed to be a common thread that we heard from people. And sure, some windows got broke along the way, but people seem pretty much unified, at least from what I was seeing, in their anger towards the state and their anger towards the police.
Yes, and I think that there is fear there, right? You know, if you are in a mask and a hood and you throw a brick through a window and a bunch of people rush in, that is one thing. If you're standing in front of the prosecuting attorney's home, that's another thing. And I think that when people literally see somebody get murdered, it is very difficult to direct that anger in any kind of way that is real controllable. It's just an outburst. And, you know, don't be fooled. Just because we didn't see it in the mass media doesn't mean that people were not posted out in front of all of those officers' homes, that people weren't, you know, taking up space in front of the district attorney's home. Those things also happened last night.
Yeah, and those are the narratives that didn't make the news. Those, that's what I was hearing, but that's not what was being shown on the top of the hour.
Right, and I think that that's because, you know, there's a difference between people taking their anger and their violence out on what they're deeming as part of the structural decay, you know, corporate America, capitalism, you know, slave wages at places like, you know, Target and Cub and like these places that burn down, right? And there was also a message of gentrification that was tagged on many of the buildings, and there was much talk about that in the street. And so I think that those things are very different than taking that into a residential neighborhood where other people live, and people who don't have anything to do with who lives next door to them risking their life and their limb to do that kind of outwardly protesting. And so I think that people were mindful of not taking that into the neighborhood because that is not a safe place. That is not an okay place. That is not a place to take that into a residential neighborhood where individuals live who don't have anything to do with what happened. And I think that the bridge or the connection in people's minds is capitalism, and that is part of slave wage, and that is part of what keeps some people oppressed. And so I think that's where people unleash their anger is more towards the capitalistic part of our society. I don't think anybody's intention was to do harm to an individual. That is not something that George would have wanted. You know, I didn't know George personally, but I have many friends who were friends of his, and he was, you know, a stand-up guy. And so I don't think that George or any of his crew are, you know, for this kind of pushback in a violent, you know, battering of property kind of way. I don't think that George would have stood for that, and I don't think that that's what he would want to see. I think that he would be, you know, I think that anybody who dies like that does want, you know, something to happen as a result of their tragic death. And so something is happening, and I'm glad that more people, you know, haven't been injured. And I know that, you know, part of change is making many people uncomfortable, and sometimes the way that people who don't have enough see the way to make that happen is to, you know, get it where the money is, and they see corporations like Target and, you know, AutoZone as those corporate entities that take their land and work them to death. So that's what I think. That's just my personal opinion. I'm not a scientist, or, you know, I don't have a medical degree or anything like that. But I think that, you know, that's what I witnessed, is that people were just enraged, and they didn't know where to take that rage except to.
Well, I wouldn't downplay the work that you and others are doing. You're an artist and a healer, and part of that very important tradition which in many ways has been the saving grace in our communities. And of course, Minneapolis-St. Paul is renowned for its for that aspect. It's art, you know, it's musicianship, the people that have stepped out. And I'm sharing that with people who are listening outside of Minneapolis, because, you know, we're in other places, and I don't think they realize that you all are organized out there. You all are about your business. So this isn't some rinky-dink town where people don't know what it is. You know, sometimes you get an arrogance from people who are on the coast. Like, I need to go out there and organize them and let them know what time it is. No, y'all have a history of doing this, and so it's to see it erupt this way.
No, we have the pride of Minnesota, which is Prince. And Prince was a musician and an artist of many forms, who always talked about the struggle, always talked about watch what the man is saying, always talked about read between the lines, and always talked about peace, love, and joy is the way for happiness to come to the individual, right? And when you find those things, then you can live in a different light. And I think that that's what Prince stood for, and that's what Prince talked about in all of his music. And Prince was about the revolution. I mean, he had a band named The Revolution, you know. So I think that yes, art is revolutionary, and it is a way of healing. And I think that art is part of the answer, and also systematic change is what's going to make the boiling point subside a bit.
Real talk right there. My last question before I let you go. When we were talking with people yesterday, the question was raised as to what Amy Klobuchar, the senator there, would be saying about this, especially considering that she's vying very hard for the vice presidency. And we don't really know her record, except, you know, for what we've seen on stage with her. To our surprise, her and Joe Biden had said something, but I wanted to see if you can kind of contextualize, what does that mean when somebody like her says something? Does it make a difference? Does it resonate? Do people in her, you know, that are her supporters, do they take that into account, or are they just like, nah, we ain't even trying to hear it at this point in time? And are you all, you know, that are you all hearing that sort of call to action when somebody like her speaks?
I think that, you know, how can I say this? I think that Amy can do a really great job getting her people in alignment, right? It's going to take white people to help end white supremacy and racism. I think that, you know, Amy knows what those things are, and the impact and the trauma that they cause in community. And I think what black people need and brown people need right now is black and brown leadership. They need to see people like them. That's why Jesse Jackson's flying in today. I think that, you know, it is important for us to see leaders that look like us leading us. You know, I can't really speak for all, you know, brown or black Minnesotans, but I don't think that they're going to be hearing Amy right now. You know, they might hear state attorney Keith Ellison. You know, they might hear, you know, vice president, city council member Andrea Jenkins. You know, they might hear, you know, Spike Moss or some of our other leaders. But I don't think the black and brown people of Minnesota are really hearing Amy right now. I don't think that they can, because she is a white woman who holds power over them. And even though that might not be her intention, or that maybe not be like her slant, that is indeed, she has a powerful position. And she's white, and she doesn't live in the hood, and she doesn't know the struggle on a day-to-day basis. And she might be able to relate to the struggle because she has authentic friends and family members who are people of color, but he's not a person of color. And so I think, you know, in all cases, in all forms, we are mentored best by those who reflect us.
Right. And that I hear. I guess what I was looking at is whether or not somebody in the position of an Amy Klobuchar or even a Keith Ellingson and others will see this outrage, will see the horror of this act of the killing of George Floyd and start pulling those levers of power and change the way policing is done, especially when you consider how many people in Minneapolis have been organizing to bring about that change. Will that happen, or do you have to have another, you know, two nights of uprising?
I don't know what it takes. I really don't. I wish I had a great answer. I'm guessing, you know, George, I'm guessing his soul is not going to be resting in peace while our city's on fire, literally. And so, yeah, I don't know the exact answer. You know, I don't know all that it takes, but I know that when you get in a wreck and your car is totaled, it's best to throw it out and get a new car instead of spending all that energy, time, and money trying to overhaul it, right? Some things are just broken and they need to be abolished. And I think that our police system is broken and it needs to be abolished. And we need to have a different way of, you know, maintaining peace. And you cannot maintain peace while you're armed to the gills. That doesn't work. People don't see that as a peaceful exchange. You know, if I'm coming at you with a white flag and you're coming at me with the automatic semi-automatic weapon in full tactical gear, that does not summons to me that you want to have a peaceful dialogue. And so I think that that's where we're at. And I think that black and brown people have been waving the flag of peace for a long time. And they are feeling like there is no peace that has come. And so I think that we need our leaders to step up. And I think that they need to be seen. And I think that the only way that this system really changes is by kind of redoing how we are policed and how we police each other.
Well, that is something that I think we should all take heed to and really soak up. We appreciate you taking time out this afternoon, Roxanne Anderson, for sharing with us these insights. How can people get a hold of you or follow any of your work?
Roxanne Anderson, I'm an on-air DJ for KRSM Radio, KFAI Radio in Minneapolis, and Google me.
There you have it. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back. Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Today, I want to talk about some of the community efforts that are underway, that are doing what some people would entitle, you know, God's work, meaning they are helping the vulnerable. They are not doing charity, but standing in solidarity with folks who are in need. And while we commend those efforts, we have to look and ask ourselves the question, why do those who have so much power and resources, why aren't they doing that, even though they hold office and they have our tax dollars? But we want to talk to the folks that are behind the Freedom Store out in East Oakland, find out what they're doing. In the building with us, we have Newman Orante. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, brother.
Good, good. We have Jamie Hala. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having us.
And then on location, we have Dr. Cesar Cruz. How you doing, Dr. Cruz?
You're good? Bless you, David D. Thank you.
First of all, props to all the work that you all are doing. And I want to find out about the Freedom Store. It's been talked about. What are you all doing? And I'm going to start off with you, Dr. Cruz, because you're on location, and then we'll go down the line. You can tell us where you're on location at. So go ahead.
Blessings to you, David D. First of all, thank you for your leadership, because right now in the news, oftentimes all we get is fear and these negative tactics that are trying to scare our community. Thank you. Thank you to Hard Knock Radio and Pacifica Radio for what you do. We're actually right now at the Alameda County Food Bank, and believe it or not, the food is running out. The need is so high. And so our organization, Homies Empowerment, has made a decision to open a Freedom Store. And with us, we have two of our board members, Dr. G. Reyes, Dr. Newman Orante, who are spearheading this work, and one of our community partners, J.P. Haler, who's the founder of the Youth Food Project. She's our main community partner. We've decided to shop all week, to get donations all week, and then share it with close to 1,000 people every week that are lining up in the streets of East Oakland looking for basic need toiletries, for food items. And so just thank you for having us on the air.
Let me bring in some of the other people, Newen, Jamie, and I think we're also joined by G. Reyes. Start off with you, Newman, to talk about what it entails with the Freedom Store that you all have running.
Well, it started, it's a project within Homies Empowerment. We're located in East Oakland, and it actually started prior to COVID-19, where Selena Gonzalez, our coordinator, wanted to at least give free things to our community. So she started with a clothing drive. Shortly after that, you know, it's like this pandemic occurred, and we shifted what the Freedom Store was doing in responding to the needs of our community. Hence, we started giving the basic necessities to the folks that needed toiletries, as Cesar was mentioning, from basic foods to health and hygiene stuff.
How's been the response so far?
This is our, if I'm not mistaken, our 6th week, and the lines just continue to grow. So it's a testimony that we're doing the right thing, that people are responding to our partnership with to provide basic needs. But we have to always remember the conditions in which our folks are facing. I think it's just been exacerbated by COVID-19, but poverty existed prior to COVID-19.
So it's kind of like 400. It's kind of like a double whammy. You
Correct.
Know, you have a very real physical threat, but you have this economic thing that's been going on for a long time. Jamie, how are you seeing things, and what do you feel people need to know about the conditions, the challenges that are facing people, the reason that you all put up this, you're taking these efforts on that hasn't been highlighted? There are a lot of narratives that have been invisibilized in this pandemic.
Well, you know, for me, it's really often about food justice, and that's how we partner with Homies Empowerment. And like Newen mentioned, the conditions of poverty existed before COVID-19, and so did issues around food access and what we consider food justice, which is really just communities being able to eat, grow, and sell healthy food everyone should have access to. And the fact that Homies Empowerment and the community there was able to respond so rapidly to this need in the community in terms of providing food and basic nutrition to folks is really, to me, the message I'd love to people to hear. And again, that this isn't new to this community, but now it's just been exacerbated. And how can we solve for this long term and use this as a, dare I say, opportunity to look at better ways to serve, to feed our communities in healthy ways?
You know, your organization is the Youth Food Project, and we've heard a lot about stimulus packages going out, right? They're working on one right now, and we're hearing that it's not millions, it's not billions, but it's trillions of dollars flowing back into the community. So specifically designed, or the argument is made to really give an opportunity for folks who are faced with these challenges to be made whole and not to fall through the crevices. Have those stimulus packages touched your organization at all? Are they talking to you, calling you up, and making sure that the work that you're doing is fully being supported? Because it's trillions of dollars.
No, they haven't. And, you know, one thing that we have had some foundations reach out to us and offer rapid response. Again, it's not quick enough, and it's not broad enough, and it's not long-term enough. So we're working with the community to do that for ourselves. But, you know, we need to think about sustainability, because this isn't going to be over anytime soon.
What would you tell to any of the politicians, elected leaders? What steps do they need to take, and what should we be pressuring them to do so that you can better do the work that you're undertaking right now?
I think what folks need to be doing is looking at organizations like Homies Empowerment and Youth Food Project, who responded so quickly to what their communities needed with the resources of only themselves and folks that care about food justice and poverty, and have been able to feed hundreds, thousands of people now in our sixth week, and to provide money without all of the strings attached and without all of the outcomes attached to it, and just see what's working and respond with dollars.
And last question, who are some of the people that are showing up that need your services?
I would say, just from what I'm seeing, and maybe it's just my lens, but I see so many mothers in that line. And again, you know, these are all just we see them as our family members, and we're there to provide what we can. But as a mother, I'm mostly seeing mothers and children's faces each week on that line. But Nguyen or G or Cesar,
It's a variety of people that's in the community. We have people that is really living in the block that comes through every Tuesday to benefit from what we have to provide and offer. I've also been in conversation with unsheltered homies that come through, right? So it's, I think we have mothers, we have students, we have folks from the block, and then unsheltered neighbors that come through. So we have different kinds of people that visit us every Tuesday.
I started off by, you know, you were working, so you didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I was talking about the work that you all are doing. It's great. It's admirable. We should spotlight it. We're uplifting it on the show. Same time, I'm angry because you shouldn't have to be doing this work. There's trillions of dollars that is all around us. There are companies that brag about being trillion-dollar companies. There's governments that find money from police, that find money for... We just had a flyover, right? Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that they were honoring you doing the flyover. It just happened right near the house.
Wow.
That money
wow.
could have gone for this work. So what is missing here? How are we in this position that you're doing work that government should be doing at this point in time?
Well, I believe because, of course, we're going... I mean, really, to the disfranchised, the poor. You know, a lot of people right now, because of this pandemic, are scared. So you have a lot of people because of this pandemic. They're not going to the, you know, the bottom of the hood, because they're actually afraid and thinking that, you know, a majority of our brothers and sisters carry the virus. But yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the government officials and so forth is not bringing that money or coming down to do it, because I think they're actually afraid.
Are they afraid, or they maybe just be like,
I don't
you know,
care.
if we can get rid of these folks in East Oakland, you know, I mean, if they're gone, then we can
we don't have
that
to worry
community
about
back.
Them.
Yeah. Do you think is that, or is it fear?
Both. I would lean on both fear and if they're gone, we don't have to worry about it. I really feel that because, I mean, we do Tent City every second and fourth Sunday. And one, there's more tents. So the residence is much larger on Martin Luther King and West Grand. So that means there's more people becoming homeless. And I mean, when I mean there's no one coming down there, you know, outside of those that's been led to see about the need, it's like those our brothers that are down there just thrown away. Like, don't nobody even care. There's no testing happening down there. They're there. And like I said, it seemed like they're there just, you know, and hopefully they just die off and then we can claim that area. That's what it looks like.
Well, we appreciate the work that you're doing. Of course, we're trying to do our part here at the station
and get
resources to you all. And so that is Pastor Mustafa. He's over there with Dr. Cesar Cruz.
Yes, sir.
They are over at the Alameda County Food Bank out there in 98th and Eads. We also have a number of people that are with the Freedom School that's on the line with us. I want to bring in one of the board members, Dr. G. Reyes. How you doing, brother?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good. What would you add to this conversation in terms of the challenges that we're facing? It seems like, you know, we're talking about the pandemic. We're talking about how many people are in the hospital, how many people have died because of it. But we're kind of overlooking and not digging real deep into the other pandemic that I think one of our guests, maybe with Newman or Jamie, talked about, which is poverty and how it's being enormously exacerbated with this situation. So talk about the work that you all have been doing on the board and what do you want our listeners to know about what's confronting us?
Yes, thank you. Great question. And I definitely want to lift up what Dr. Nguyen Orante has been talking about in terms of poverty has existed there already. And I think you mentioned this before, David, the idea of invisibilizing as a process. I think what we're trying to do is we're visibilizing what's been invisibilized. On a number of levels, those who have been invisibilized are those who are most forgotten in our society, those we want to discard, those we want to marginalize. And so we're saying, we see you. We are in your neighborhood. We are on the block. I walk to the Freedom store every time we have it. I live right down the street. My neighbors go down there as well. So we're visibilizing people. Number two, as you said, like, should we be angry that our government is not doing this? Our government has never been doing this. So we're visibilizing that very process that the government itself is trying to minimize the impact on Black and Brown communities. And we're saying that our responsibility is to our communities. I could be angry and rely on somebody else to do this, but a lot of folks have already said that if we don't take care of our folks, then who will? If we don't tell our story, then who will? And that's also why we want to be here today with you, Davey, is to be able to tell our story in such a way that we're not focusing on charity. We're centering around solidarity. We're centering around what does it mean to stand in solidarity, to have empowerment within our own community. We are in a morally sick society. And so given that idea, what does it mean to recover our sacredness? What does it mean to recover our community determination? What does it mean to recover our humanity? And that's what we're trying to do. We're centering around our humanity.
But at the same time, I don't want to let any of these elected officials off the hook. You know, none of these officials who could give money to the Lakers and give it to, you know, the steakhouse and all these big entities, they should not be let off the hook at all, because that's billions and trillions. And imagine what we could do with just a million, you know, of those billions. You know, imagine how many people could be put to work. And then we also know that the stimulus package was given to some of these companies because they said that they had workers that are like people on this phone call. And he said, we're going to make sure Cesar gets paid, or Dave gets paid, or Dr. G gets paid, or Jamie gets paid. And so they got the money and then laid everybody off. So what happened with the relief that money was supposed to happen? It didn't. There's massive unemployment, which you all talked about, but there's all this stimulus money. I want to kind of shift gears just a little bit, and I'm going to go to you, Dr. Reyes. I know we're talking about the Freedom Store, but you're also on the board for Homies Empowerment. Education and making sure our people learn, and you all have been working on doing these, you know, the school, the Homies Empowerment School. How has that changed the focus right now? I know that where we teach, we're online until 2021, right? That was announced this morning. What does it mean for people in our communities now that may find themselves in similar scenarios where they're going to be at home, they're going to have to learn, and how do you all adopt as a school that's coming up?
Wow, that's a great question, Davey. The short answer is I don't know. But the reality is that our school design process, we've taken a pause for it in order to tend to community responsiveness. Not that we weren't community responsive before, but right now that's what we're prioritizing because we understand that we are in a survival mode and we need to lift ourselves up from that. I think also what's important to realize is that our school design has always been a threat to the system of education. Our community organizing work is always a threat, just as the Black Panthers work has always been a threat. That's why the government tries to impose, finds ways to be more repressive with red tape and so forth. And so as we think about education, what we have to really stay true to is understanding that what we're doing is we're countering this westernized project of dismembering. And what I mean by that is we need to be separate from our ancestors. We need to be separate from our traditions. We need to be separate from our heart, from our emotionality as humans, and really focus on these things here that define education, or these things here that define what does it mean to take care of our community. Instead, we have to lift up a project of remembering. What does it mean to reassemble the ways that have been systematically buried? Some people have talked about that we have to do deep psychic archaeological work in order to reroute ourselves back to the ways that we've forgotten. So we've forgotten how to take care of ourselves. Similarly, we've forgotten how to educate ourselves. And so what does it mean to empower our community to really go back to that and understand this concept that many indigenous cultures have of shared humanity and shared being? So if we understand that we occupy spaces together and we've been here before, then what does it mean to regain that, to recapture that? And I think our school design process will stay true to the course of understanding that. The detour on community responsiveness to support our community through food and toiletries is really adding more clarity to what we believe in. It's really right. Adding more nuanced ways to support our community that we were already thinking of doing. All this is just deepening our work. And I think the reason why red tape doesn't distract us is because we're clear on what we fundamentally believe and what we're trying to do. And this work here with the Freedom Store, let alone the school itself, is we believe this is true. And so we have to stay the course in doing this.
You know, hearing you talk, I'm reminded of what Rosa Clemente, you know, longtime activist and former Green Party vice presidential candidate said. She said, you want education, every kid that lives in our community should be learning from the way that we are responding to this pandemic. This will be the most valuable education that they can get, seeing who helps out, how we come together, how communities are able to stand in solidarity, which has been your ethos, and watching to see who is faking the funk, you know, who is sitting there with titles behind their names but not doing anything, or, you know, acting in such a an imbalanced and nefarious way. So it seems like this is an opportunity, and I know y'all keep your kids involved with this, definitely. Am I right or wrong on that, right? They're aware of the work y'all are doing. So that seems like this will be an education that will be ongoing. As we close out, and I'll start off with you, Dr. Newman, and we'll go to Jamie. First, tell people, you know, how they can support the work that you all are doing at the Freedom Store, where it's at, and if you can wave the magic wand, what would be the marching orders you give to our listeners? So we'll start off with you, Dr. Newman.
All right. I would say, I think we know that resources are critical, and resource comes in multiple forms. The money is good because it allows us to purchase what we need for our communities, but people can also come and stand side by side with us and work, not just on Tuesdays, but on the days that we're grocery shopping, on the days that we're putting the packets together, right? On the days that we're actually trying to sustain the work and doing some fundraising. So there's many ways that people can get involved. Homies Empowerment and the Freedom Store is located at 7631 MacArthur Boulevard in Oakland. Selena Gonzalez is our coordinator, and so, you know, there's people there that will welcome both monetary and also the physical presence of people coming and standing with us. We're about to launch a GoFundMe, but in the meantime, they can go to homiesempowerment.co and look for the link where they can contribute to CESAR or Social Good Fund. And that's socialgoodfund.org.
We appreciate it. Jamie, what would you add to this? You know, what would be the marching orders you give our listeners? What would be the ideal unfolding of this situation that you would like to see come to fruition?
For me, it would be that the Freedom Store and Selena's dream to do this for the community would be sustainable. And I don't think we can do that without our community partners and thinking critically and maybe systemically about who those folks are to keep lifting up this weekly thing. So people could be thinking through, like, you know, folks that they think could help us long term. And also, just again, as like a mom, I'm always thinking about these mothers standing in line and our critical needs. Every week, everyone's asking for pañales, for diapers, for wipes, for formula. And so if there are ways people just really would like to, you know, sometimes you want to buy your own thing and drop it off and have some intention behind your donation, I would say to be thinking about the moms and the small children when you do that. And yes, monetary donations and any food items are always welcome.
Thank you so much. Dr. Reyes, what would you want to add as we close out?
I would add to for folks to understand that they're not in this situation by themselves. And so it's important to stay in community and resist the pressures to completely isolate. And what I mean by that is, if we have the capacity to go to the Freedom Store and pick up a bag of groceries and supplies for members in our church who are not able to go, then we should do that as well. If we can tap on the door, knock on the doors next door to us and ask, is there anything that you need today? Freedom Store is open. I can pick up some things from you. We could do that as well. It doesn't just have to begin and end with us at the Freedom Store. We are not the only ones. We are all the ones we have been waiting for.
I appreciate that. And thank you all. And then I'm going to, Dr. Cesar Cruz, how do you want to end, man? You was at the food bank in 98th. I seen him the whole time that we've been doing this. He's been riding in his whip, you know, doing donuts and smashing down, you know. And now you're at another location. So, you're at the Freedom Store. He's at the, there he is. He got all the way back. So, how do you want to end things as you're standing in front of Homies Empowerment and Freedom Store?
Yeah, thank you, David D. I have so much hope when I listen to you, David D. I have so much hope when I listen to Hard Knock Radio. And I think we're interconnected, you know, listening to Dr. G. Reyes, to J.P. Haler, to Pastor Mustafa Muyi, to Dr. Nguyen Orante. Like, this gives me hope when I surround myself with amazing freedom fighters. And the school we're designing, this is what we say about young people, that every young person has a warrior, a healer, a scholar, and a hustler within, and we are all in our collective process of emancipation. And so my emancipation is connected to yours and vice versa. And so we stand together. And what Deb Prez would want us to say was, we want some land for our seeds to grow. So if you're asking me to dream big, we are reclaiming land. We are growing our own food. We are making our own clothes. We are finding a way to be independent and sustainable. That was the dream of our ancestors. That, you know, when this hit, all of a sudden we thought we lost it because we didn't have access to toilet paper or to rice and beans. Well, listen, we can grow our own food. It's how we reclaim the land and how we take care of each other. I am my sister's keeper. I am my brother's keeper. You are my keeper. I am your keeper. We are interconnected. Let's ride till the wheels fall off. I do believe another world is possible. And I'm so thankful that Harriet Tubman is smiling right now and says, a new day is coming.
There you go. I want to thank you all from the bottom of my heart for, you know, sharing with us this inspirational narrative. because this is not the thing that's uplifted. As you started, as you all said, it's all about fear, and it's coming. And we don't want to be irresponsible and say, well, you know, we're not afraid. We're going to take off our mask and be reckless. We're talking about y'all standing in solidarity and knowing that we're not alone, knowing that we can look to the left and look to the right, and that there are committed individuals that understand our collective values and are going to make sure that none of us are left behind. So thank you very much. We will be in touch, and we're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. Dr. Cruz, Dr. Narante, JP Haler, and Dr. Reyes, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side.
Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? I look around and all I see, masked faces staring at me. Keep your distance, don't touch me. Get your hands off my TP. Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity? I'm sick and tired of staying at home. Even worse, I live alone. Gotta get out, I need to roam. You can't shake hands on the phone. Touch, I need to feel, I need to hug a friend for real. I'm not down for this new deal. I'm not down for this new deal. The COVID killer keeps piling it on. Counting the dead goes on and on. We gotta stay safe, gotta be strong. Ride this out no matter how long. There's no borders, there's no walls. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Around the world, hear the call. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity?
A cat named Joe. He wears a red bandana, plays a blues piano,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico.
He wears a purple sash and a black mustache,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico.
Well, the first time that I saw him, he was sitting on a piano stool. I said, and said, just be cool. He wears a red bandana, plays a blues piano,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico.
He wears a purple sash and a black mustache,
a honky-tonk down in Mexico, in Mexico.
All of a sudden, all the lights went low,
in Mexico.
Somebody shouted, crazy, go, Joe, go. Joe got the message from a bongo lick. The joint was swinging on a Latin kick. I didn't know exactly what to expect. Joe threw his suntan arms around my neck. We started dancing all around the floor. And then he did a
you
dance.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What's the Tea Virtual Edition, every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. live streaming on Zoom. What's the Tea is Portland's only